And welcome back. Route 66 is the fabled roadway that connected Chicago to Los Angeles 90 years ago and helped bring a new kind of culture to the country. It was a culture of neon, motels, and other roadside commerce. It's all being acknowledged through July 16th at the Missouri History Museum in an exhibit titled Route 66, Main Street Through St. Louis. St. Louis was the biggest city between Chicago and L.A. along the 2,400-mile route, once again serving as a gateway to the west of sorts. Joining me in studio to talk about the museum's exhibit and the St. Louis role in Route 66 history is Sharon Smith, the curator of civic and personal identity at the Missouri History Museum. Sharon, nice to see you again.
Thank you, Don. Good to be here.
And I mentioned just before we went on the air that I'll bet you're having great success early on with this exhibit. People must be flocking to it.
They are. We're seeing record numbers coming. We've only had the exhibit up for less than a week, but it has been tremendous lines waiting to get in. And, you know, fortunately, they have 13 months to see it. So,
oh, it's July 16th of next year.
For some, yes, okay, well, yes. That's
I'm
a little confusing.
That,
yeah. So we want to make sure that folks know it's 13 months.
What is it about the mystique of Route 66? I mean, it's all around us here, and people talk about it and reminisce about it all the time.
They do. You know, one of the things that I learned early on in the research was that this really is has become not just a road, but a destination for many people to experience it now that it's kind of gone into its past. And yet it's so alive. And one of our researchers, one of the real historians of the road said it's all about the people and the really iconic places all along the road. And we're fortunate to get to that to tell that story here in St. Louis.
St. Louis is given high marks and a lot of credit for being a kind of a major point along the entire route. Why is that?
Well, we were the largest city between the two endpoints of Chicago and Los Angeles. And so I think that's part of it is that we were, again, a destination sometimes. People mm-hmm. traveling one way or the other, this was a place where they could stop and maybe spend a couple days. We also have that kind of iconic people don't quite know what to do in the city here about Route 66 because it didn't really make or break the city. Unlike many small towns that died when the Route 66 went away, you know, St. Louis continued on and then we didn't quite know what to do with it. We see all these signs everywhere, but we're not quite sure what to do about that. So hopefully our role is to clear all of that up in the next 13 months.
What about all of those signs everywhere? I mean, that is a fact. It seems like a lot of places are trying to claim to be a part of that route, but can they be, all of them?
They can, I think, depending on where they are. There were three major routes. So, you know, if you go anywhere out Manchester, you're going to see the signs because that was the first road out west. You would also see them, of course, on Chippewa Watson. That was the desired mm-hmm. road that spent most of its life as Route 66. But there was also the bypass road. So if people were wanting to go around the city, they would take Dunn Road and then down Lindbergh. So three major roads through the city, and then all of the smaller roads getting from one of the five bridges to those three major roads. So yeah, lots of parts of the city.
And people and businesses are still claiming that you can find us on Route 66, even though it was kind of disenfranchised or whatever the term is several years ago.
Yes, yes. And of course, you know, there are some that still are alive and well on what we would consider Route 66. So for instance, you could say Ted Drew's is certainly one of those. The Donut Drive-In, Crestwood Bowl, you know, lots of places along, or look at Maplewood, you know, historic Maplewood. All of those places could say they are on Route 66 because at one time they were. A lot of the places along Lindbergh are gone because the airport expanded and took a lot of those out. But, you know, you could say that. And then if you look further out Missouri, a lot of those places would certainly still say they're now kind of coming back to the road because of the resurgence of the interest of Route 66.
We spoke with the curator at the vacuum cleaner museum yesterday, and he proudly in St. James, Missouri, proudly uh-huh. pointing out it's located right here on Route 66.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah.
What are folks going to see at the your exhibit?
Oh, well, that's what I love to talk about. They are going to see 11 neon signs all lit up, which is, you know, of course, sort of the road's story is neon. They're going to see five different vehicles. We've put five vehicles in the 6,000 square feet gallery. They're going to see a lot of iconic stories about St. Louis, stories about the Park Moor, stories about the Coral Court, stories about Ted Drews. We have the first custard maker that was used on the Chippewa location for Ted Drews, dating back to 1941. That's never been seen before in our collection, but it's there. They're going to also see the neon letters from the Chase Hotel. When those came down in 1989 off the rooftop, they were put in. They were given to us and put in storage. They've seen folks have seen the letter C lit up in past exhibits, but never all five letters. And we have conserved those. And now folks, for the first time since 89, will see those again lit. So exciting pieces about St. Louis. There's a drive-in theater where they'll get to hear about Missouri Route 66. And a lot of really amazing stories and memories that people have shared with us in the exhibit.
What is the connection between the Chase and Route 66?
So Lindell would have been part of that initial road that came from McKinley. It kind of got onto Lindell, took it to Skinker, went south on Skinker and McCausland out to Manchester. So for a few years, the Chase Hotel, the Jefferson Memorial Building, our own history museum building, was on the road. So again, almost anybody can claim it at some point in time.
It must have been a difficult trip, just given all of what you've just said with regard to the various twists and turns. It must have been a difficult road trip just getting through St. Louis.
Exactly. You know, and when we bring people into the gallery, one of the first things we have there is a video piece that shows many, many choices of roads over the time period of the run of the road. And, you know, just to look at that, there's all these lines that are just lit up showing the different routes. And it had to take a whole road map, clearly, for people just to get through the city. And I'm sure when they got the bypass road, they were happy to maybe skirt around the city.
How busy was it? Do we know how much traffic were generated by this trip to the west?
You know, I had seen some photos as we were doing the exhibit, that, you know, sometimes traffic backups got really extensive in the city as well as just going out Watson, which, again, would have been an opportunity, I guess, to consider an interstate as an alternate. The sad part about the interstates, of course, is that those businesses then lost out over the course of time. But it really did generate a lot of traffic jams through cities. And, you know, again, the smaller towns probably loved that. But often people were just trying to travel the road.
What did the route bring to our culture? Were motels, for instance, something that are a direct result of Route 66? I kind of have that feeling, but I don't know.
You're exactly right. You know, I think that the culture of spending nights in motels, you know, people would have camped before, but now they have a little bit more luxury, maybe in a motel, a motor hotel, as the name is derived from. You know, that would have been certainly important. Also, the whole notion of drive-ins, not theaters, also, of course, but the drive-in restaurant where you get a car hop that comes out to your car, those are huge stories all along the road. Fast food really grows up along the road in a lot of places. We tell of the first Steak and Shake in St. Louis was located on Route 66. Same with the first McDonald's west of the Mississippi, Route 66. So these places were placed there because travelers now have this car mentality of being in the car and driving for long distances, but these necessities still have to take place.
You know, I think of what it must have been like making a trip like that, not only on Route 66, but any kind of a lengthy trip back in the day when cars were nothing like they are now and they would overheat and, you know, it would be all sorts of breakdowns and that sort of thing. There must have been a lot of that going on.
Absolutely. The interesting story, we had a number of people who came in and shared some memories with us that we have as part of the exhibit. And one of the guys talks about he was going west to California. He stopped short of the desert and bought a water bag for his car back in the 50s or late 40s. And he didn't even know what it was. They told him, you're going to need that when you get through the desert. And he filled it up. And sure enough, at one point, he needed it. Car started to overheat. He went out and that water bag was only half full. He thought, well, what happened? Here, a stone or something had, you know, kind of flown up into the bag, nicked a hole into it. And so it was only half full now, but he still had enough water to get him through the desert. But it's those kinds of stories that we don't even think about today.
Sure, that could be life-threatening or something like that. Well, we can't talk without bringing up the coral courts because that, it's history. Its history is such it makes people chuckle even today. It's no the coral court's no longer with us. But how do you deal with that in the exhibit?
Carefully, no. That's we do.
X-rated
that's
section.
Right. You know, the Coral Court is one of the most iconic places in all of St. Louis Route 66 history, and so we have five large format lit, I guess is the way you say it. They're light boxes, and we use them in our 1875 exhibit. So one of these light boxes that's huge has an image of the Coral Court. So it's clearly a very important story, and the one thing that I try to make clear is that, you know, in its day, the Coral Court was touted as one of the nicest motels in all of Route 66, and that people, travelers were told, stop at the Coral Court, that's the place to stay. So it had a really wonderful reputation for much of its life, and it was gorgeous, and it was immaculate, and people loved it, and part of the reason were for the exact things that we snicker about. The enclosed garages were an important feature. Think about if you're from a small town and you're coming into this big city, you might want your car protected in that garage, that closed garage. It was a great asset for the Coral Court to be able to advertise that. And then secondly were the hourly rates. Those were really implemented initially for travelers who were doing long distance, especially truckers, and they needed that short time to just sleep. So some of the very things that we look at the at its later years as, you know, kind of risque, were actually very important things, and that many motels along the road did. So, so we have some great images. We have some pieces from the Museum of Transportation on loan to us from the Coral Court interior and some exterior pieces as well.
There was quite a battle to try to preserve the Coral Courts. I keep calling it plural courts, but Coral Court. Was it 85? When was that raised?
It came down in the early to mid 90s was the sort of downfall of it, and then the final demolishing.
But there were a lot of people that wanted to preserve that as a National Historic Site.
It actually made it on the National Historic Register, and it still was demolished. So, you know, it's kind of sad that it, you know, something didn't remain of it.
Yeah. There are bits and pieces, as you've already indicated, of it, remnants, if you will, of the old 66. What are some of the other things that we can look to aside from some of those things that you've mentioned?
Well, as far as stories go, you know, some of those wonderful neon pieces tell the story of some of the Motel Row along. So right across the street from Coral Court was that famous Motel Row. And so, you know, if you hear the Duplex, the Chippewa, the Wayside, those are all motels that still stand, and we actually have a neon sign, a no vacancy sign from the Chippewa Motel. So it's really neat when you can see the photo of the historic photo of this particular place and then see a sign or a remnant from that building that still exists. So a lot of the pieces in the exhibit are on loan, some of them from our collection, and then a lot we worked with lenders. So it's really nice when people have saved and preserve those neon signs. For instance, La Casa Grande, also along the road, still standing, but no sign there. And that sign is now lit and in the museum. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of those things. And as you go out further west in Missouri, which we tell that story a little bit, you know, some of those towns really do it up well. They're really good about keeping their Route 66.
What is the neon story? We've alluded to that a couple of times. Was this when neon was just coming into its own and used extensively along the route? Is that why it's so important?
You know, I don't know if it was just coming into its own, but certainly it would have been, say, you know, once we got this whole romance with car culture and driving and taking to vacationing, I think there's a sense that this was the way to pull people off the road. You know, if they're driving at night and they see those flashing lights or they see some bright, you know, lit sign, that's going to be the eye catcher. Part of the, I think, the interest in Route 66 too in those years was that there was a lot to see and a lot to do, whether it was kitsch or whether it was for real, you know, say the Grand Canyon just off the road, but the Painted Desert, you know, the places in the Southwest that were amazing, real formations of, you know, and national parks or what have you, or the kitsch of some tourist attraction like some reptile village or something that, you know, is going to cause people. I think the neon was huge for that purpose.
I'm thinking walnut bowls.
Exactly, exactly.
Which brings us to roadside commerce. I am, again, assuming that there was not so much of this going on, given the way, you know, the lack of roadways like this, that this spawned a new kind of commerce in this country.
Yes, I would say so. And again, you know, that's, I think, the difference with St. Louis, although we can certainly see that with some of the places along the road, you know, where Ted Drews tells an interesting story for our own local history here, is that when his father, Ted Drews Sr., decided to build a second custard stand, they had the one on Grand, and they decided to locate a second one. They actually told, he tells this story so amazingly in the exhibit, he said, my parents, you know, I came in from playing and my parents said, Teddy, we're going to build a new custard stand right on Route 66. I mean, they knew how important building it on Route 66 was going to be. And he talks about the fact that people would go out Route 66 to leave the city and get out into the cool air of the country, even if it was just to go to Cuba or whatever. And they would come back and this would sort of be their you know, entry into the city. They'd stop and get ice cream before they would, you know, then go into the city to go home. So they located in just the prime spot. So I think that, again, commerce understood this draw for the, and again, people are going west for the first time. This is maybe their first opportunity to go from Chicago somewhere west or even further east, but they're going to catch that Route 66 diagonal out to the west.
There, another historic part of the story, it deals with the Depression, mm-hmm. and the fact that a lot of people were emigrating to the West Coast and trying to find a new life at that time. Route 66 played a key part in that.
It sure did. And we get to tell that story. We borrowed from the Museum of Transportation also a 1919 Ford Model T slat-back truck. And the really nice part about that is that, you know, it sits there kind of stark with one of these great light box images of, you know, the Western Road, and really clearly allows us to just reflect on the fact that for many, the earliest use of that road was not for vacation, but it was truly a hope for a better life in California. And, you know, while that's not significant maybe so much for folks who lived in St. Louis in the day, it certainly allows us to tell that more national story of the road.
I pointed out in the introduction that it's 90 years old this year. But was there any other way to go west at all? I mean, people from Oklahoma had to come up here to connect with Route 66 to go. Was there any other means of getting there?
There were many other roads. You know, there would have been certainly, you know, the interesting thing is that Route 66 combined a number of trails, early trails. That was the way that a lot of these early highway systems were built, was connecting trail, you know, from one town to another and then just paving them. And that was the way to do that. I think that they saw Route 66 not as the only way west, but maybe the quickest way west. Whether, you know, you're talking about mountain ranges we have to get through, lots of rivers. So which way is the quickest way to get west? And that would have been this one.
Why Route 66? Why not 96 or 166?
They agonized over numbers back in the day. We tell that story as well in our early part of the exhibit. It was going to be 60. And the numbers that ended in zero were most important to, for whatever reason, to people to have that number come through your state. And Governor Fields of Kentucky, when he heard that 60 was going to be the road west and it wasn't going to touch his state, he fought really hard to have that 60 come through Kentucky, which then was not going to be this diagonal road. So they had to kind of go back to the drawing board. They'd already printed maps with 60 as the route west. And so more meetings. The meeting in Springfield, Missouri, then was the one that made it come up that the number 66 happened. But that number 60 happened right here in St. Louis at the Jefferson Hotel. It just didn't stick.
Did any of our most famous desperados use it? I'm thinking of Bonnie and Clyde, people like that.
You know, we don't get into that. But, you know, of course, folks will know the stories of Merrimack and Jesse James, although, again, that's legend and not true necessarily. So, you know, who knows? I'm sure they all were around the road.
What have we missed that you have in the exhibit that I haven't brought to the fore here? There are so many different ways to go.
You know, I think it's I really think that the thing that we keep wanting to make sure folks understand is that we do set this story in the national context, but we really focus on Route 66 as a St. Louis story. But interestingly, the one thing we do get a little serious about is that while we talked a lot this morning about the heyday and vacationing, that for some people that wasn't necessarily the case. And so even in the midst of the vacationing and heyday period of Route 66, we have a green book, which is the African-American guidebooks that were printed in the early years that told people where it was safe to stay all along, not just Route 66, but all along the roads all throughout the country. So we actually have a real copy of the Negro Motorist Green Book from 1949, and we blow up the pages of St. Louis so that folks can see places that would have been accommodating. And we do that for the LGBT community as well as for Jewish folks. So lots of discrimination certainly in those years, and we want to be sure that that story is told as well.
And time just caught up with Route 66. The interstate highways from the 50s on just did it in, I guess.
Did it in until there was a push to make it a scenic byway in many places. And now you see this resurgence for sure.
Sharon Smith, thank you so much for being with us and telling us about the Route 66 exhibit underway now and through July 16th of next year. I want to be sure that folks realize that.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you so much for being with us. Recognizing Chuck Berry. He certainly is familiar with Route 66, an iconic song in its own way, too. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll take a look at the top news stories of the week in our Behind the Headlines segment. We'll also talk with Missouri Governor Jay Nixon about his family connection with a significant part of American history. And we'll hear about the latest restaurant openings and closings in this month's Sauce Magazine hit list. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.